Hey, comedy fans, welcome to another episode of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm your host. My name is Vinny. Joining me today in studio is my good pal, Chris Allen. Today's episode is brought to you by Comedy at the Carlson, the only place you'll be able to see Chris Allen home for the holidays for four more shows this weekend. You can grab your tickets now at carlsoncomedy.com. And now let's kick it over to the studio and have a conversation with Chris. Good morning, Carlson casters. My guest today is not just a Rochester, New York native. He is not just a U.S. Air Force veteran. He is no ordinary comedian. He is a rising star in the world of comedy, and he is here for four shows this weekend. He's back at his home club here in Rochester. It's Chris Allen. Good morning, Chris.
What's up, Vinny? How you doing, man?
Chris, it is great to see you, man.
It's great to see you, too. Glad to be back.
So how's everything in Virginia?
It's going, man. It's going well. I'm having fun. I'm producing some shows down there. My son's in middle school. My wife is doing well.
Hold on. Miles is in middle school?
He's in middle school, man.
You're the father of a middle schooler.
A middle schooler. And apparently he has a girlfriend now that my mom and my aunt have told me about, but I didn't know anything about this. I know he had like a little friend, but I didn't know they're using titles. So, yeah.
When'd you find this out?
Yesterday. I knew him. And
you're out of town and you find this out.
Yeah. Well, he came with me. He's here.
Okay.
So I know him and this girl have been kind of talking, and like she said he was cute, but I didn't know they put titles on it. And then this morning my aunt was like, so Miles has a girlfriend? My mom was like, last night she goes, I didn't know Miles had a girlfriend. I go, I didn't know this either.
Did your wife know?
Apparently she did, because I asked her, I go, hey, did you know Miles and so-and-so are kind of like boyfriend? She goes, oh yeah, they email each other. I go, he's not telling me any of this stuff.
Okay. Have we met this girl? Like an email relationship. This could be like a weirdo.
At the school, yeah.
Okay.
They've known each other since like, I want to say first grade. Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Like when kids are emailing people, they could, you know, his girlfriend could look like me. And that'd be a problem, right? That probably would be great.
That'd be a big problem. Yeah, man. There's a lot of weirdos out there. I even tell him that. I go, hey, man, don't talk to any weirdos. Don't talk to weird people.
That's a good rule.
That's a good rule, Pop.
So, like, how do you feel about this? Like, your son's growing up, man.
Man, it's very weird, man. To be honest, I don't know how to feel about it. It's just like, it's my little boy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I want him to grow up, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't want to lose what I have with him right now.
So, how old is he now?
He's 11.
He's 11. Wow.
It's such a great age, man, because we play video games together. We love watching cartoons together. He's still like really affectionate and calls me daddy. And like, I just know within the next year or two, it's going to become dad and all that kind of stuff. And he won't want to hug me. And
he's going to be walking 10 feet ahead of you in the mall.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I don't, I'm afraid of those days coming, but I'm really just trying to enjoy these last days of him being my little boy right now. So,
okay. So listen, I don't want to get too into it. I don't want to tease Miles, but I got to ask you, he's 11 years old. Mm-hmm. He's got a girlfriend.
Right.
Has that affected what he's asked for Christmas? Is he going for like cologne and stuff this year?
Oh, dude. So the day after, because he told me, go, hey, he goes, hey, this girl said I was cute and everything. I go, okay, that's cool, man. So the next morning when he comes downstairs, he's got like this chain, and he's never worn a chain. He comes downstairs, he's wearing a chain. He's got on the smell goods. I go, are you wearing some smell goods? He goes, yeah. I go, and you got a chain on? I go, is it because this girl says you were cute? And he just got all shy and weird. So it's affecting some things.
Okay.
But he but you know what? I think so, because he's really been harping on a phone. Because it's typically okay. Just been computer stuff, but he's like, hey, I want a phone so I can text my friends.
So, he means he can text his girlfriend.
So he can text his girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
That's where this is going.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, listen, he can email. Email, it's fine. Email, it's fine. Yeah. You're going to give an 11-year-old a cell phone? Is that the way it works now? I don't have kids. I'm just curious.
My wife and I have fought it. And he's at that age. He's at that age right now where he has to have one, man. Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
you might want to put it off. Some parents do the thing where they just give their kids like this little phone, like a little watch.
Yeah.
And you can program a few numbers into it. That way, if they get it in a situation, they can just call you from the watch.
Yeah.
And you know, and I don't want to get dark, but all the stuff that goes on in schools, I want to be able to talk to my son in case there's a weird lockdown situation. Because right now we don't have any communication with him while he's at school.
Man, what a different world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
What a different world we live in.
Very different.
So he's with you this weekend. Yep. You have four more shows here at the Carlson. You have our very funny friend Sean Day as your feature this weekend.
Yes, man. Yeah.
So
yeah,
very man. Excited for that. This is going to be a very cool weekend of shows. If you've never had the opportunity to see Chris, this is your chance. You get your tickets now at carlsoncomedy.com. Now, Chris,
yes,
you started comedy in Rochester before you moved away, right? Or did you start when you were down in Virginia?
I started in Vegas.
That's right.
Yeah, Vegas.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I knew it started with a V.
Yeah.
I knew it started with a V. So tell me about the first time you got on comedy, first time you got on stage to where you are now. What do you think the number one lesson that you learned, the thing that kind of helped you turn it around and kind of focus into a professional direction?
Don't give up.
Okay.
Do not give up. And the very first time I was on stage, I was too drunk. I left my notes on my table. So my wife had to yell up the premises to me. Like, cause you know how you make your little set list of just
right.
Like, keywords. And she's like yelling up like newscaster, you know, fat guy.
So she knew your material better than you did in the moment.
Right. And so she's yelling up my premises and I'm up there just bombing. But I learned to like, just don't give up and just try to really be yourself. Don't try to please anybody. And you know what? This sounds weird. Don't start playing to the back of the room. That's something I learned very early on. As much as we love trying to make other comics laugh, you're not going to get far trying to play to the back of the room. You know what I mean?
That's a great piece of advice.
You have to play to the audience. Because early on, depending on what scene you're in, some of these mics, there's not a lot of audience. There's no audience there. And it's nothing but comedians. So people start playing to comics. And then they try to do it at a comedy club. And they're bombing. And they're like, what's going on? It's like, bro, you've been doing mics for the last year in front of nobody but other comedians with sick sense of humor. And then you go to a show where there's regular people with regular jobs who just want to get out and have a good time. And here you are just saying the most weird thing. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. You just have to be aware of your surroundings.
So I've always been of the mind where if you're not writing for the audience, you're doing it wrong. That's just simple. Like if you're not writing for a crowd,
right,
you're doing it wrong. If you're writing for your friends, you're doing it wrong. If you're just writing for you and you expect everybody else to like your thoughts and you're not trying to put on a performance.
Right.
That's the other thing that I think people kind of get lost to. They play for themselves.
Right.
They play for their friends and they don't play for the people who bought tickets.
Exactly.
And so it becomes a problem. So I think that if you're not writing for the people who bought tickets, you're doing it wrong. That's just my opinion.
I agree 100%. And I think that happens because people will watch all the top comics, their specials, and they go, well, that guy's doing it. It's just like, well, that's because that person has been doing this 10 plus years and they've whittled that down to an audience of people who know who they are. Mm-hmm. And that's why they get to do the things that they do.
The dream, I think every comic's dream is to have an audience that likes them for them.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
And the only way you're going to get that audience is by walking a very fine line of putting yourself out there, but also trying to put yourself out there for their benefit so they enjoy you.
That's very true. That's very true. I feel like the process is learning joke structure and learning how to tell a joke. Because you see a lot of guys, they're very early on and they want to tackle some very serious and topics mm-hmm. or very edgy topics. And it's like, I get that. You see this guy doing it. Like, you watch the NBA, you want to dunk. You see these guys dunking, you want to dunk. Can you shoot a jump shot?
Barely.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Can you just shoot? Do you even know the game?
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. These guys don't know the game and they want to do all these complicated things. You have to learn how to tell a joke first.
Yeah.
And then once you learn how to tell a joke, then you can get into more complicated things.
Let's talk about jokes. Let's talk about laughs per minute. That's always a fun thing to try to structure your set around.
It's so hard, man.
It is.
It's hard because like you were saying, when you write, you have an idea. When you write, you're like, oh, this is going to be funny. This is going to be funny. And this is going to be the punchline. And then you get out there and you find out like, oh, they didn't like any of that shit.
Nope.
And you have to be open to, like you saying, a lot of comics think like they hear veterans talking and they go, don't give in to the audience. Do what you want to do. That's where they are. Where you are is you have to give the people what they want to a degree. If you want to get work, especially as a new comic. So you have to listen to the audience's responses. You have to like take their advice and go, hey, I didn't really like that. Or this thing wasn't funny. You have to listen to that advice and tailor your act, not tailor, but mm-hmm. switch your jokes around to that. Like all those punchlines, A, B, and C that you thought were funny. They're not funny. Those beats aren't funny. Not the beats are B, D, and E. And you have to accept that.
How far along were you in comedy before you were able to really process an audience watching you. You know what I'm talking about? What I'm talking about, folks, is when you're on stage, when you first get on stage, when you first start doing comedy, it is very difficult to gauge if the audience is with you because you're so in your own head,
right?
Trying to remember your jokes, trying to keep everything together in the order that you wanted to, phrase it the way you want to, that a lot of times I notice when people are really new, they don't even look out at the crowd. They kind of are in their own internal looking at the ground or pacing around a little bit.
Right.
How long did it take you before you were able to look in an audience and go, okay, they're with me?
It took me about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes even now I have to remind myself, hey, you have to be present. You have to be there. Sometimes I forget to use my body as a tool, as a comedian, because sometimes we can get caught up there just doing the jokes or maybe a few little hand gestures, but like use your entire body. Like you said, people can see you. You're there. Use your entire body. And when you start making those connections and looking at people and pointing and go, hey, can you relate to this? Oh, you are married, so you might know what this is about. And now you're like, you go from being a guy up there or a gal up there just repeating and reciting jokes to somebody who is coming across as conversational. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's kind of coming out naturally. And that's when you really start to excel as a comic, where you don't sound like a robot and you really feel like you're connecting with the crowd. But it took me a couple of years just to get comfortable to really start talking to people and not worry so much about the joke structure, but make it sound a lot more natural. And that's when the reps come in.
Sure.
Like once you figure out, like, this is a natural rhythm for that joke, now the reps become important, because we talked about this earlier. Not all reps are good reps.
Yeah.
Like we've seen guys in the gym doing like weird stuff.
I haven't, but
you see a guy doing push-ups or something, you go, you really think you're
putting in work? Nope, I haven't seen that either.
But you know what I mean, right? It's just like you see someone doing something, you go, you really think that's benefiting?
And you're watching, you're looking at it and you're going, this is bad form.
This is bad form. You're picking up bad habits. You're not going to see any results. Yeah. Like, yeah, you'll see some guy put 225 on the bench and he's lifting it maybe 3 inches. It's just like, again, I don't know what that guy's working on, but that ain't it. And you see a lot of guys like that in comedy, where they'll scratch the surface of a joke for a premise and it'll get a little bit of laugh and they go, oh, that's it.
Moving on.
It's like, dude,
that's exactly dude, it. I see it all the time.
Like, you just barely started. You need a couple tags there.
The best jokes are down in the dirt, kids. You got to dig
down.
You got to dig for them. You got to dig you have to dig the funny out of things sometimes. And you may stumble across, you may be one of those miners who's out there and, oh, look, I found a little chunk of gold sitting on top. There's way more underneath. You just have to put in the work.
Right. And to piggyback up that analogy, you may be out digging for gold. And guess what? You might find something you weren't looking for, but it's valuable. Mm-hmm. And as a comic, you have to go, you know what? I know I wanted gold, but I got some silver right here. Or I got, you know, whatever. This, mine that as well. Explore that as well.
You know, I had an interesting conversation. I love the month of December here at Comedy at the Carlson. I really do. Here's why. Because I get to see so many people that I actually love and respect in comedy that are from here. We get to bring people like Mike Danber home. We get to bring people like Chris Allen home. And over the last 2 weeks, it's been great because I feel like I'm doing the show and having conversations with like friends.
Right.
And I had this talk with Danber last week, and I brought up this old adage, and I'd love to hear your opinion on it. You guys are two completely different generations. But the old adage that I hear batted around a lot by young performers, and I think we're just starting to touch on this, but what they say is stage time is stage time. What do you think of that adage?
I like it.
You do?
I agree with it. Stage time is stage time, man.
In the literal sense?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Well, you don't think so?
Well, I guess the adage is if you go on, what they're trying to say is if you're going on stage, then that's a good thing,
right?
No matter what. Now, we had kind of just brought up how sometimes some things are proactive or like are not proactive. That's a terrible way of putting it. Are diminishing you and taking away from your skill.
Okay.
Because you're picking up bad habits.
All right. So, yeah. Okay. I guess I misunderstood you a little bit. I agree with that. It is. You have to. It's all about intention. You have to be intentional. Because you're right. Stage time is stage. It is good. If you're putting the work in, mm-hmm. Like, if you're going up there just jacking around, not really working on anything. Like, I've seen guys in New York, they go to a paid, like, you ever been to a paid mic where you literally have to pay to go on?
Yep.
They get on stage and go, oh, what do I want to talk about? It's like, dude, you just paid $5.
Yeah.
And you're not coming with, you paid money. You should be ready to go with, like, all right, even if I don't get laughs, here's 4 new jokes that I wrote that I want to work on. Mm-hmm. So you have to be intentional.
I feel like that is an incredibly great way to put this. You need to be intentional.
Yeah.
Because coming up in comedy is not easy.
No.
It's not. There's thousands of people who think that they're really good enough to be work at a professional level. And not all of them are. And the very difference true. Between those people are the ones who make it and the ones who don't is the amount of work
right.
that goes behind it.
Right.
And I always believe you got to work smart.
Right.
And that's what you're saying is you have to work smart and be intentional with the right. stage time that you get. And listen, just because there's an open mic on a Wednesday doesn't mean you have to show up to the open mic on Wednesday.
Right.
Prepare for that open mic on a Wednesday. And if you're not prepared, don't go up there just to go up there and put on a bad show and go through the motions.
Right. Just exactly. Yeah, there's I was reading Rick Rubin's book. It's about artists and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between being busy and being productive. Some people just want some people just want to be busy. Hey, I got 9 shows. Okay, cool. But are you getting better at these 9 shows? Or are you doing the same thing over and over again? Are you not getting laughs? Are you not trying new bits? Yeah, it's just like there's a difference between being busy and being productive. Like
No, you're right. I also question a couple of the motives sometimes of people when they put on 9 shows in a town. Like, what are you getting from that? Are you getting better as a comic? Are you making professional connections to get yourself further down the road to work professionally?
Right.
Or are you doing it just to do it? And if you're doing it just to do it, there's no end game involved there.
Right. No, you're right. You have to have it. You have to be intentional about what this mic or what this show is for. If you're doing it for clout or you're just doing it just to say you got a show or you just want to post more flyers, it's like this is not going to be good because you know and I know it's like it takes a lot of time and hard work to actually build a good mic. Mm-hmm. And the thing about if you want to have a good mic, it has to be good comedians there. Mm-hmm. It has to be fun. It has to be somewhere that people want to go. But like, yeah, having 30 mics.
We were talking
that's
earlier.
That's nothing, man.
Before the mics turned on, everybody, Chris and I were in a very, very deep conversation that probably would have exploded all of your heads listening at home. None of you would have been able to handle it. It was so intense. You would have had to hold a cup under your chin to catch your face as it melted off listening to our words. But Chris said something really interesting earlier. And he said, it's very hard to get better when you're working with everybody that's at the same level.
Right.
Yep. Can you expound upon that? I thought it was so interesting.
Yeah. This is years ago. Rodney Perry, great comedian. They were in town in Vegas to do Who's Got Jokes. And he came through an open mic and everybody was like, oh, my God, Rodney Perry, Bill Bellamy was great. And he sat us all down like an OG should do. And he was answering questions and all this kind of stuff. What can we do to get better? He goes, look. You need to find somebody with experience. He goes, y'all are funny. He's like, I'll give y'all that. Some of y'all funny. He's like, but you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get better because y'all all on the same level. Y'all don't have the experience to really, truly help each other out. And like I told Vinny, if you have a group of young comics, the best thing y'all can do for each other is be honest and go, hey, man, that joke is not good. A lot of comics, we want to be friends. We don't want to make waves because we want to get booked. We want to be liked, and we are not honest with people. But behind each other's back, we go, that guy stinks. I don't like that joke. She's bad. That's what we do behind each other's backs. But if you want to get better, you just got to go, hey, that joke stinks. And then each individual comic, you have to start going out and watching professionals work. You got to go to different cities. You got to find somebody that is better than you. And look, I know we all want stage time. Do you have you guys have no idea how many shows that a lot of great comics have gone to and never fucking went up on that show?
Yeah.
You know what they because that was me with Vince Morris. Vince Morris was my mentor. You know how many 3 or 4 hour car rides where he's like, hey, man, come to this show with me in Ohio. And I would go. just to watch him perform and listen to this guy give me a 3-4 hour masterclass on comedy before we went up there. And then we would break down what happened on that entire show, from how they sat the room to how it was set up to what the MC did to why the lighting was wrong to what the feature did to why the jokes that he did work to, like, hey, remember the part where this guy said this and I said this is why I did that. I mean, yeah. Vince Morse would break down the entire show. You have to have someone in your corner that you can do that with. Somebody who can be honest with you, watch your act and go, hey, that's not going to work. You got to have a guy or a gal that is more experienced than you, who can show you the ropes. Because if you are all 1 or 2 year guys, you're not really doing each other any favor. It is fun. You learn a lot, mm-hmm. but you have to be around people who know what the fuck they're talking about and what they're doing if you want to progress and get better.
There's this problem that I feel happens a lot when people first step into the world of comedy. Mm-hmm. They have all open road ahead of them.
Right.
And they don't understand what the terrain is. It, right. Like, literally, when you first start doing comedy, your career could be anything.
Anything.
Your career could be, you could be George Carlin. You could be Richard Pryor. But you're just starting, and you're not to the end game yet. But here's the thing. If you don't know the terrain and you don't know what you're doing, you're never going to make it down the road.
Yeah.
Because you're going to either give up or you're going to get run off the road and nobody's going to want to work with you.
Right. You can only spin your wheels so much, and you're like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah. And so the other problem that happens is when you're not being deliberate or intentional, I feel like you set yourself up to just get sucked into the click bubbles, to get sucked into the constant spinning of wheels. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to surround yourself with better. You got to surround yourself with people who have been down further down the road than you have been. I honestly, Chris, I love that you said what you said this morning.
Oh, thanks, man.
I really do.
Thank you. Thank you.
I feel like this is the kind of stuff. Now, I know we're doing a show. We're going to sell some tickets to see you this weekend. Yeah. But this is the kind of stuff that I hope that people listen to the Carlson Cast that love comedy and want to get into comedy, because that's a big chunk of our audience are people who are learning about comedy and wanting to get there. Right. So thank you for that wisdom.
Oh, no problem, man. Let me say this. Like, when I met Mark Norman, I think I might have been like 7 or 8 years in. And I feel like I'm a pretty decent crowd work guy. Mm-hmm. And this is dangerous for people who are more of a dynamic comic, people who like doing crowd work. When you get to the point where, like, you can go up and just do 15, 20 minutes of crowd work,
yep.
and you've done those bar shows where, like, you do have an act ready to go, but things get crazy. And next thing you know, you've done 30, 40 minutes of crowd work and you've killed. And for a lot of us, we can go like, yo, this is the way, this is the route. Because honestly,
why do I need to write jokes? I'm amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's such a dangerous part of your career where you get a little bit of knowledge and you can hold your own on stage a little bit. And a lot of guys end up going down the crowd work route, which is fine. You can do whatever you want to do. And I found myself starting to do that. And I met Mark Norman, and Mark Norman, he still is, but at the time he was like known as being a huge joke machine. Mm-hmm. And he told me this. He goes, hey, man, he goes, I love the crowd work. He goes, but I want to see more jokes. He goes, Chris, he's like, the money is in the jokes. And I had never heard anybody say the money is in the jokes. And I go, you know what? You're right.
Mark has done this show 3 times and he's never said the money is in the jokes. Now yep. I'm mad at Mark.
Yeah, the money's in the jokes.
Text him for me. What? No.
And he does crowd work. You see the
cool stuff
like that.
He's great.
He goes, the money's in the jokes, man.
Now, I don't want to blow up any of Mark Norman's spot, because Mark is one of the most amazing comics out there right now.
Right.
I love working with him and watching this guy perform.
Right.
But I will tell you this. He does this thing at the end of his act, which, spoiler, he basically opens up to the audience to yell things out at him.
Right.
And all of these lines, they look like they're popping off the top of his head. No, he wrote this stuff.
That guy's a writer. Yeah.
He wrote this stuff. Like, there's nothing you're going to yell at him that he hasn't written something for and is ready to go.
Yeah.
So just so you know, even in the best crowd work you see, there is preparation.
There is. And you know what that is? That's because he's not a guy that's like this on social media, just like tweeting random shit. Mm-hmm. When he gets on there, he's looking at the news. He's looking at what's going on. Like, Mark and I will go to breakfast or lunch before a show. And I'm just pick a name. Just say, like, say something happens with, I'm thinking of a celebrity. What's that guy's name?
Which guy?
with the in front of the police thing?
Oh, that's David Bowie. David who's long Bowie. Dead.
Yeah, yeah. David, say David Bowie was in the news news for whatever reason.
Yep.
We would be at lunch and he would come up with a funny line and we would die in laughing. We're writing without even realizing we're writing. Yep. And then we'll do the show. And you're right. We'll get to the end of the show. He'll go, "What you got for me?" David Bowie. Right, immediately I'm gonna do that joke that I said at the lunch table with Chris. He said it, boom, kills. He just didn't make it up. We've already been working on just jokes and thinking about funny stuff. And
there's a secret to the trade, ladies and gentlemen, that you just learned. Not everything is as off the cuff as you feel or think that it is. And let me tell you something. We talked a little bit earlier about finesse and being heavy-handed. What Mark does is finesse, baby.
Finesse.
That is finesse, because a lot of people would be tempted just to write up a setup to do that joke. Mark waits for people to pitch the ball to him and
knocks it out.
Yeah.
Right. But he already wrote that because he's taking in information and still writing in his mind. Like you said, that might not make it into the act, but he's still exercising his creative brain and writing jokes based off headlines and news stories.
Chris, you are a wonderful person to talk shop with.
Oh, come on.
So, Rochester Comics, well, Chris is in town, definitely come check out his show and, you know, bother him. Pick his brain. Leave me alone for a while. Go bug Chris.
Yeah, please, man. I'm always willing to help young comics, because if it wasn't for other people like Norman and Vince Morris and just a litany of other comedians that were, above me or ahead of me, even younger comics, man. And I'll say this, Vinny, to balance it out, I've learned a lot from a lot of younger comics as well.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've learned a lot because young comics know where comedy is going. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I used to do this joke, and I used to use the R word. The people don't use the R word anymore. And I remember the first time I did that joke using that word, and it got nothing. It bombed. And I was like, yo, these people hate me. And after a show, a good friend of mine, we still work together all the time. His name was Winston Hodges, great comedian. He goes, "Hey, man," he goes, "I saw your face when that joke bombed." He goes, "You want me to tell you what it is?" I go, "What is it, man?" He goes, "You said this word." I go, "So what?" He goes, "People don't like that word anymore."
Yeah.
And I realized and I'll say this, and I'm not trying to make it overly dramatic, but that was a key moment, because I could have been like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to continue. And I could have went down another route and just been more abrasive. But I embraced it. And I go, you know what? You're right. I don't even need that word. He goes, yeah, you're right. You don't need it. And I would do that joke without that word. I would just say, oh, that's stupid. And the joke was it was fine.
Yeah.
I don't need to offend anybody by using that word. And if I wasn't around younger comics, I would have never known that.
If your goal in comedy is to offend people, you're doing it wrong. Chris, that's the right way to handle something like that. You take it and it's a teachable moment.
Yeah.
I mean, teachable moments come in all sorts of different shapes or forms. And you can never really close yourself off to anybody at any level in their ideas or thoughts. You should always be, I think we should always be listening to each other. But the other thing that you should be careful of, guys, and we had a Facebook comment here I'm going to throw up. I threw it up earlier. They were talking about when you said you need to surround yourself with better. 100%. If you want to be better, you need to surround yourself with better. You need someone to make you step up your game. Thank you for the comment. I don't know why StreamYard isn't telling me your name, but we appreciate you watching.
Yeah.
One of the things you should also be very careful of when you are first getting into comedy, it is good to get around people who know what they're talking about.
Right.
But you should also be very careful with who you listen to.
Oh yeah.
You should also be very careful with who you listen to.
And I don't want to throw out names.
Nope. Never ever. No names. All I'm saying is what you need to look at is your resumes. Look at resumes.
I'll say this, because he's famous and he wouldn't hear this, and I think he would understand. Remember when Jeselnik was huge?
Yep.
That was a terrible time for open mic comedy.
Dude,
terrible.
It was around the same time Louis C.K. was also huge. And I saw a million Jeselniks and a million Louis C.K.'s.
Yeah.
And listen, those are two one-of-a-kind performers.
Yeah. Masters at what they do.
Yep.
Because you guys would come in and try to be Jeselnik. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm trying to be Jeselnik. I go, think about this. I go, do you think about how many times that guy has gone to a Funny Bone years before you've seen him on TV? He goes up there on a Thursday night, does that act, comes off stage, and is handed a check. Thank you, but no thanks. We don't need to hear this shit. What are you doing?
Right.
You know how many times that guy has probably gotten fired before he got that act down and then built the audience?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people that. I go, yo, he's not just up there saying wild shit. I go, he can't get away with that without that haircut. He can't get away without that face.
Yep.
He can't get away without that suit.
Yes. Everything that the guy has done to put together that act. And that career is intentional. And there was a lot of sweat and tears that went into
intentional.
Intentional.
And he had to be open to change. Because I don't know what Anthony Jeselnik dresses like on the street. But you can't go up there with a dirty, wrinkled T-shirt and jeans doing that kind of stuff. Because people are going to go, oh, my God, this homeless guy.
Will somebody tell this dirtbag to shut up?
Yeah. But when you see him in a he's well-coiffed. He's got a tailored suit. He's got this swag to him. He seems like a character. He seems like the devil incarnate. And there's something about it. You don't really take it seriously. And now you can kind of go, I want to hear what this guy has to say. And now your focus is like, this is dark. Yeah. But now you become focused on like, man, these jokes are dark, but they're very clever.
That's literally, folks.
That's clever.
Let me tell you something. That's another word that people completely forget about, is being clever.
Yeah.
Take the time, write jokes. And listen, if that's the path you go down, mm-hmm. and you create something, awesome. But don't try to be another performer. Nobody likes a cover comic.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I don't need to see you doing your best Mark Normand. I don't need to see you doing your best Jeselnik. I don't need to see you doing your best anybody. Be the best you can be.
Right.
And the only way you're going to get down the road is by surrounding yourself with people who've been down the road, and also being intentional with your stage time.
Yes.
These are the lessons we are teaching today.
Yeah, be intentional. And if you want to be a dark guy or an edgy guy, really put time into that. And don't just, like you said, it takes time.
Yeah.
Be intentional.
One of the things I've always enjoyed about like tiptoeing on that line, and one of the things, just a little tip for you guys, don't spell it out. If you're trying to be like a little mischievous and you're trying to get somewhere, you'll notice that Jeselnik doesn't go walk to the edge and say, and then he did this to this person's this, this, that, and the other. He will allude to something.
Right.
And he does it so masterfully that you finish the joke in your own brain.
You finish it in your own head.
Which is the most amazing thing in the world. So, if you could write like that, God bless you.
Exactly. And that's what I tell guys. It's like, I know some of you guys want to say certain words, but we can't. And sometimes, honestly, saying it without saying it is funnier than saying it. Like you said, if you can get other people to say, like Louis, the N-word thing where he goes, you making me say it in my brain.
Yeah.
Don't put it. That's such a brilliant joke. And I know some people might get mad at that joke, but that's a well-crafted joke. And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Don't ever get mad at a joke, people. Think about it for what it is. It's a joke.
Right. And the thing is, it's like, if it's bad, it's just a bad joke.
Yeah.
That's it. And I tell guys all the time, like, I don't like that joke, but here's how to make it better.
Yep. So, Chris, how's your show going? How's the Chris Allen Show? You can watch that on YouTube, by the way. When you're done watching this episode, go over there and subscribe. Would you mind?
Yeah, it's going, man. I'm having a lot of fun. I will say this. It's a lot of work because I do it all myself. I'm working on getting some more cameras, but I'm having fun, man. I'm interviewing some local people, talking about relationships, love, if they're entrepreneurs. I'm just having a lot of fun learning how to edit, learning how to be a good interviewer,
mm-hmm.
Learning how to shoot video, learning what good lighting is like. I'm learning a lot. Learning a lot.
Well, you have a dope studio.
Oh, thanks, man.
Your show looks great.
Thank you.
It's very funny and it's interesting. Chris, you have great perspective, man. I don't know if people tell you this. You just have great perspective.
Oh,
You're one of those people that, sees through bullshit. And if you haven't checked out Chris's podcast or his YouTube show, the Chris Allen Show, it's available now. Please go check that out.
Everything's streaming. So, yeah, man, I'm having fun with it. And I'm open to figuring out what I want to do with it specifically. Because when you create something, you have an idea like, this is what I want it to be. But you also have to be open to it changing just a little bit, or being open to like, oh, say you have a episode with some ghost people and you notice like, man, I'm getting 30,000 views on this. I think people like this. This might end up being a ghost podcast now. You just got to be open to that kind of thing sometimes.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think that changing is one of the most important things you could do. And you know the biggest problem people struggle with in comedy is the people who don't change their acts. They stay the same forever. They stick with the same jokes. They don't develop new things. and they don't put that work in there, that's a big problem. But not even just with jokes. It's just your perspectives change.
Right.
And if you're, and as the world changes, if you're not changing with it and your comedy isn't changing.
Right. And you don't even have to agree with everything. And I'm going to use names because these guys are big. I think Nick DiPaolo is a great guy, but that Nick DiPaolo is an example of a guy who was not willing to change. He is who he is. And he's wildly successful. Mm-hmm. But I hate to see guys like that have to go down this weird route where now they have to do some weird right wing podcast. It's like, dude, come on, man.
Yeah.
Again, you can do what you want to do. But I also use this as an example. Bill Burr could have easily been that guy. Easily.
You know, that's a great point.
Easily been that guy. But Bill Burr is someone who stepped back, looked at himself and goes, I'm an angry motherfucker. I need to find out why. He found out the source of his anger.
Right.
Dealt with it. Now he's married. I remember he used to shit on marriage for years. Why would I get married? He's a father now. Bill Burr could have easily been yet another angry older comic.
Yeah.
But he embraced the change. He's changed his perspective. And I feel like Bill Burr is the best comic we have right now.
It's very hard to argue.
You talk about perspective. Bill Burr, hands down, when it comes to social issues or just being funny, hands down, every fucking comedian bows.
Bill went to a psychologist, didn't he go to a shrink for a while? Was that something? Yeah. I always think that's interesting because I feel like a lot of comics, when they're quasi successful and then go to the shrink either really helps them or completely ruins them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It goes two different ways, but good example, he's not really a stand-up comedian, but somebody like Howard Stern, his show was completely something else that he started going to the shrink every day, 5 days a week, and his show is now just celebrity interviews. Yeah. It's a completely different thing. It's just therapy changes people.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Burr is a guy who really knows himself, and you can just, he's changed so much. If you watch his first Netflix special and then watch his fourth one, it's almost like a different guy because he used to be so angry.
Yeah.
And which was funny. And he still is to a degree, but he owns it and he accepts it and he knows when to pull it out. I love Bill Burr. He's one of those perfect examples of you can change and it's not a bad thing. Because if he didn't, there's no telling where his career would be, man. I've seen a lot of guys who don't want to change, man. And right now they're doing a lot of stuff that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Dude, you have no idea how many comics hate their audience.
Oh, I have a very good idea how many people. Oh, I have a very good idea. Let me tell you something. It's very clear. You pick up on it very quickly.
They don't like their audience, but it's just they've been doing that for so long.
Yeah.
That now they can't change and they won't change, but they're not happy doing it anymore.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of good advice in this. You know, one of the real keys to knowing when it's time to change is the audience's reactions to you.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things I've seen. People who've been doing comedy for a long time don't really change stuff up, do it at the same time. The audiences just aren't into your act anymore. Yeah. It starts to disappear. And also, people who come into it and never actually build up an audience but refuse to change their attitude, like we talked earlier, people who want to work too blue, they want to go into those real deep topics that are, you know, make people uncomfortable but with no funny behind it.
Right.
But they expect the audience to, find them. Through doing that.
It's like, you don't see what I'm doing. I'm doing this. It's like, but you're not that.
If the skill's not there, you're not doing anything productive.
Exactly.
You may be right in your perspective, but you're not doing anything productive for comedy.
Dude, I used to do these shows a few years ago in Virginia where there's a lot of breweries in Virginia. I guess there's a lot of breweries everywhere.
Yeah.
But we used to do these brewery shows. And I was on with these very young comics and all this stuff was going on. And they would try to attack all these social issues. And we're in these really rural areas.
Yeah.
And they're just just shitting on everybody. And then I got to go up. That's just dude, you turn this into a political.
I do some jokes about my kids, talk about my wife.
Yeah. And me being the most seasoned comic, I'm going last on these shows. And I literally had to follow 7 or 8 people who have just made this audience mad for the last hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah. But they killed. George Bernard Shaw, the old philosopher, had a comment or a very famous statement that it's stuck with me for a really long time. He said, a wise person expects to adapt to their environment.
Mm-hmm.
A foolish person expects their environment to adapt to them.
Yep.
And that's just, if you put it like that, it's hard to argue. You're kind of dumb.
I just listened to this book, and it's very popular. It's called Who Moved My Cheese? You ever heard of that?
I did hear about that. My friend was talking about it.
And it's kind of the same thing where they put these mice in these personified mice in this maze. And there's another group of people too, another group. And they've been getting this cheese from a certain section of this maze. And then one day it's gone. And there's two characters in this book. They go off to find more. And in the story focuses on these two. They're like, what happened to my cheese? Why did it move? This isn't fair. And they would just go back there every day and just complain that the cheese wasn't there. And the story follows the other group too, where they go off and they find little pieces of cheese here and there until guess what? They find the big cheese.
Yeah.
And eventually the two mice who are sitting around not doing anything, they go, you know what? Maybe we should start moving around. And they do. And then they find the cheese and they're happy again. And that's what happens with life. Sometimes we're comfortable and then things change. You lose your job. You start to lose your audience. You start to do this and we get mad and bitter because things aren't like they were 5 years ago when everything was going well. No, it's time to move and do something different.
Right.
You can't expect your life just to be the same way all the time. And that's where people go wrong. They want their environment to adapt to them or to the most stupid thing. They want it to stay the same. It's not going to happen.
Preach it, Chris. Yeah. Now, folks, Chris is here for four more shows this weekend. Yes. Two tonight, two tomorrow.
Yes.
Please follow Chris on social media. At Chris Allen Comedy. Check out the Chris Allen Show on YouTube, and you can find that really easily. Just type in at Chris Allen Show in the search bar on YouTube. It'll pop right up for you. Yes. I thank you for your time this morning, man. It's so good to talk to you, Chris.
You too. One last thing. One last
please.
Thing. All right. So when it comes to mentors, I will say this. Please pick a good mentor. One thing you don't want to do, you don't want your mentor's hangups to become your own. You don't want somebody else's because someone's more experienced, that doesn't mean they're perfect. You have to really be aware of what their hangups are and not let that become your own. Because I had that happen
in the
to
world
me.
Of comedy, particularly.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. We've discussed this a million times on the show. Most comedians are kind of damaged somewhere.
Yeah. Don't let their damages become your damages because that might not even be a thing that affects you at all, but that's their hangup. So when it comes to advice, take what works for you and leave the rest. Take what works for you and leave the rest.
Damn,
and
Chris.
Try to deal in positivity, man. Take the good things from people and the negative things that you see. Go, okay, I see what that is. I don't want that. And if you become a mentor, really try not to pass down your hangups or pet peeves onto the guys and gals who are looking up to you.
Fine, Chris.
Positive.
Fine, Chris. I'll be your mentor. I'm just kidding. Everybody, thanks for tuning in today. Chris Allen, you're the man. As always, come see him this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to be back next week with another episode of the Carlson Cast. Until then, act right, Rochester. We will see you at the show. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review.